Welcome back to the deep dive. Today's session is going to be a bit more structured than usual. We're focusing on a very specific and I'd say very crucial part of the economics curriculum. We are opening up the textbook to chapter 9, Models with Natural Logarithms.
That is right. And this is really designed specifically for you, the first year university economics student.
Exactly.
We know this is that point in the semester where the math can start to feel a little more abstract and, you know, the notation on the chalkboard can get intimidating.
For sure.
But our goal today is to really function as a study guide. We want to walk through the logic, the methodology, and especially the interpretation of these models so you are ready for your exams, for your data projects.
It's a toolkit session, really. We have a lot of source material here, lecture notes, textbook definitions, data sets. And our mission is just to distill all of that into a coherent narrative. Hmm. We're going to move beyond those simple linear relationships, you know, y equals mx plus b, and look at how we measure proportionate changes, things like elasticity, skewness, exponential growth.
And it is so important to state up front why we're doing this. It isn't just to make the math harder, I promise.
Right.
Economists, well, we love logarithms because they align so much better with how economic variables actually behave in the real world. We aren't just trying to pass a math test. We are trying to model human behavior and market dynamics accurately.
Okay, so here's our roadmap for the session. We'll start with the mathematical foundation. What is a natural log? What is this number E?
The basics.
Then we'll get into the core concepts of elasticity and semi-elasticity. After that, we are going to do a deep dive into what we're calling the big four regression models.
And we'll explain exactly how to interpret the coefficients for each one. That's the key.
Yes. And we have a detailed applied example using earnings and education data to really nail that down. And finally, we'll cover some cool applications like the rule of 72 and how to look at exponential growth.
It's a comprehensive agenda. So let's get started with the why. Before we even define the function, why is this transformation even necessary?
Good question.
The source text really highlights four key motivations: measuring price elasticity, calculating percentage changes, handling right-skewed data, and linearizing growth.
Okay, let's pause on that right-skewed data point. This is something students will see constantly in any data set that involves money, right?
Absolutely. If you look at the distribution of variables like earnings or house prices or even the size of companies, they are almost never a symmetrical bell curve.
No, not at all.
They're right-skewed. And that just means most of the data is clustered at the lower end, say, typical salaries. But there's this long tail stretching out to the right. That tail represents the very high earners.
The outliers.
Correct. And in a standard linear regression, those outliers can have a really disproportionate pull on the regression line. They can potentially distort your results.
So what does the log do?
By taking the natural logarithm of those values, we essentially squish that right tail. The distance between, say, 100,000 and a million is huge in dollars, but in logs, it's much, much smaller.
Ah, I see.
This transforms the distribution to look more, well, more normal, more like a bell curve, which helps satisfy the assumptions of our statistical tests much better.
So it's about statistical hygiene just as much as it is about interpretation.
Precisely.
Okay, let's get into the math itself then. Section one, the mathematical foundation. I think for many of us, the log button on the calculator is just a bit of a mystery. How should a student conceptualize what a logarithm actually is?
The most precise, but I think also the most intuitive way is to think of it as the reverse operation of raising a number to a power. It's the inverse function of an exponent.
Can you walk us through a basic example of that relationship?
Sure. Let's use base 10 because it's familiar. We all know it from the metric system.
Right.
So if we have the equation 10 squared equals 100, so 10 to the power of 2 is 100.
Okay.
The logarithm just asks that question in the opposite direction. It asks, 10 raised to what power equals 100?
And the answer is 2. So the log is 2.
Exactly. We would write that as log with a little subscript 10 of 100 equals 2. The general formula is, if you have a to the power of b equals x, then log base a of x equals b. You're essentially just solving for the exponent.
Simple enough. But in economics, we don't really use base 10 much.
No, we don't. While base 10 is common in, say, engineering or general science, in economics and econometrics, we almost exclusively use a different base.
But base e, the natural logarithm.
Yes. So when you see ln of x in your textbooks or in your software like SATA or R, that refers to the log of x using base e.
And e is, what is it?
It's a mathematical constant. It's an irrational number, approximately equal to 2.71828. It's a transcendental number.
I think students, myself included, often struggle with why we use this specific number. You know, pi makes sense geometrically, it's about the circle, but what is the physical or economic interpretation of e?
That's a great question, because it's not as obvious. Unlike pi, which is geometric, e is fundamentally about growth and time.
Growth and time.
It's the limit of continuous compounding. Imagine you have a unit of growth, and you divide the time periods into infinitely small slices. You're compounding every nanosecond. You'd hit a mathematical ceiling. That ceiling is defined by E. It's the native base for any process that happens continuously, which, when you think about it, applies to most economic phenomena.
Like markets.
Exactly. Markets don't just open once a year. They move constantly. But there's also a very, very practical calculus reason for using natural logs in regression. It's all about the derivative.
Right. I remember this.
That is the real key for our purposes today. The derivative of the natural log function, ln nx, with respect to x, is simply 1 over x. So dln x over dx equals 1 over x.
And let's unpack why that specific derivative is so incredibly useful for approximation.
Well, if you rearrange that calculus term for small changes, for discrete changes instead of infinitesimal ones, you get this fantastic approximation. The change in the natural log of x, which we denote as delta ln nx, is approximately equal to the change in x over the level of x.
So delta ln x is approximately delta x over x.
Precisely.
And delta x over x is?
Well, that's the definition of a proportionate change.
You got it. It's the change relative to the starting point. If your income goes up by $1,000 and you started at $100,000, the proportionate change is 1,000 over 100,000, which is 0.01.
Okay.
The math tells us that the change in the logs will be very, very close to that 0.01.
And to get the percentage change, which is usually what we care about, we just multiply by 100.
Correct. The expression 100 times delta ln x is the standard approximation for percentage change that you'll use constantly.
Let's apply this to that numerical example from the notes just to see how accurate it really is. We have a variable x that increases from 40 to 40.4.
Okay, let's do the exact proportionate change first, just using a calculator. The change in x is 0.4. The initial value is 40.
So 0.4 divided by 40, that's 0.01. That is exactly 1%.
Exactly 1%. Now let's calculate it using the log approximation. We take the natural log of the new value, 40.4, and subtract the natural log of the old value, 40.
Okay, let me pull up a calculator. The natural log of 40.4 is about 3.6988. The natural log of 40 is about 3.6888.
And the difference is 0.01.
It's 0.01. Or, if you want to be super precise, it's about 0.00995.
That is incredibly close. Practically the same thing for our purposes.
It is. The approximation is excellent for small changes. The rule of thumb in econometrics is that this approximation holds up really well when the proportionate change is less than, say, 0.1 or 10%.
And if it's bigger than that?
If you're dealing with massive hyperinflation or data that doubles and triples, the approximation error grows. In those cases, you should use the exact calculation. But for the typical marginal changes we see in economics, the log difference is the standard tool.
This brings us perfectly to section two, elasticity and semi-elasticity. These are concepts that, I mean, they're on every single microeconomics exam. It's so crucial to distinguish them clearly.
Yes, it is. And the distinction really comes down to one thing.
Yeah.
Units versus proportions. Let's start with semi-elasticity. Semi-elasticity measures the proportionate change in your dependent variable, y, in response to a level change in your independent variable, x.
So it's percent change in y divided by unit change in x.
Correct. The notation for that would be delta y over y, all divided by delta x.
Right.
Think about the earnings and education example again. We usually measure education in years. That's a level unit.
A single unit.
Right. We measure earnings in dollars, but we often care about the percentage growth. So if we find a semi-elasticity of, say, 0.08, that means a one-unit increase in education. So one more year of school leads to a 0.08 proportionate increase in earnings.
Which we would just translate to an 8% increase in earnings.
Precisely. Now, you contrast that with elasticity. True elasticity is the ratio of two proportionate changes. It's the proportionate change in y given a proportionate change in x.
So this time it's percent change in y divided by percent change in x.
Yes. And notice, the units cancel out completely. This is why price elasticity of demand is so powerful. If the elasticity is minus 2, it means a 1% increase in price leads to a 2% decrease in quantity demanded.
And it doesn't matter if the price is in dollars or yen.
Or if the quantity is in tons or bushels. It's a pure number. It's unitless.
And the beauty of logarithms is that they allow us to estimate these elasticities directly using a simple linear regression, right?
That is the main application. That's why we're doing this. Mm-hmm. By transforming our variables into logs, the regression coefficients, that B2 slope term, effectively become our estimates of these elasticities or semi-elasticities.
And that leads us perfectly into section 3, the 4 regression models. This is, I would argue, the most important part of today's study guide. We need to walk through the big 4 specifications.
Let's do it.
For you listening, we're going to define the model equation, state any constraints, and then most importantly, explain exactly how to interpret that slope coefficient, B2. So let's start with model 1, the linear model. This is our benchmark. The equation is just y hat equals b1 plus d2 times x, no logs anywhere.
Right. In this model, b2 is simply the slope in levels. It represents the change in y in its original units for a 1-unit change in x. Very straightforward.
But dollars per year.
Exactly. If you're regressing consumption on income, and B2 is 0.8, it just means for every extra dollar of income, consumption increases by 80 cents.
Straightforward. Okay, now model 2, the log linear model. This is also known as the log level model. The equation is log of y hat equals B1 plus B2 times x. Mm-hmm. So the dependent variable y is logged, but the independent variable x is not.
Okay, first, a constraint to note. Since we are taking the log of y must be strictly positive. You can't take the log of 0 or a negative number.
Right, which is fine for things like wages or prices.
Usually, yes. Now, the interpretation of B2 here is, it's an estimate of the semi-elasticity. Mathematically, B2 is the proportionate change in y for a unit change in x.
So how do we translate that into a percentage for our final answer, the number that we'd write on an exam?
You multiply the coefficient by 100. That's the rule. So the implementation step is 100 times B2 equals the percentage change in Y for a 1-unit change in X. This is the standard model for returns to education.
Got it. Okay, model 3, the log-log model, or the double log model. The equation here is log of Y hat equals B1 plus B2 times log of X. Both variables are logged.
Okay, constraint check. Both X and Y must be positive here. And this model, this one directly estimates the elasticity.
The true elasticity.
Yes. Because both sides are in proportionate terms, in logs, the coefficient B2 represents the percentage change in y for a 1% change in x.
So what's the implementation step?
It's simple. You don't need to multiply or divide by 100. The coefficient is the elasticity. If B2 is minus 1.5, then a 1% increase in x leads to a 1.5% decrease in y. Done. Easy enough. Okay, last one. Model 4. The linear log model, also called the level log model. The equation is y hat equals b1 plus b2 times log of x. So y is in levels, but x is logged. Constraint here, just x has to be positive. Now, this interpretation is a bit more nuanced. b2 represents the change in y in units in response to a proportionate change in x.
Okay, what does that mean practically?
Well, a 1-unit change in log of x is a bit of a weird concept. It corresponds roughly to a 100% increase in x, which is usually too big for a useful interpretation. So we scale it down.
Bro.
We talk about a 1% change in x. To find the effect of a 1% increase in x on y, you take the coefficient b2 and divide it by 100.
So the rule here is divide by 100.
Correct. If b2 is 500, then a 1% increase in x leads to a 500 divided by 100, which is a 5-unit increase in y.
Perfect. So let me just summarize those implementation rules, kind of like a cheat sheet for the listener.
Good idea.
For the linear model, just read the coefficient as is. It's the slope. Yeah. For the log linear, with the log on the left, multiply the coefficient by 100. For the log-log, with logs on both sides, read it as is. It's the elasticity. And for the linear log, with the log on the right, divide the coefficient by 100.
That is a perfect summary for an exam.
Great. Let's ground all this in section 4, the applied example. We've got the earnings data set from the source material.
Yes.
So the context is 172 full-time male workers, all age 30, in the year 2010. The mean earnings, our Y variable, is about $41,000. And mean education, our X, is about 14.4 years.
And this comparison is so vital because it shows that model selection isn't just about picking the right math. It's about the economic story you're trying to tell. Each model answers a slightly different question.
Okay, so let's look at the linear model result first. The regression output is earnings equals minus 31,056 plus 5,021 times education. The coefficient on education is 5,021.
Okay, based on our rules, this is the simple slope. It means one more year of education is associated with a $5,021 increase in annual earnings.
And what's the problem with that interpretation?
It assumes a constant dollar return. It forces the model to say that going from 8th to 9th grade gives you the same 5,021 alert boost as, you know, finishing your PhD.
Which seems economically very unlikely.
Right. So now let's look at the log linear model. The output is log of earnings equals 8.561 plus 0.131 times education. The coefficient is 0.131.
Log on the left, so we multiply by 100.
Exactly. The interpretation. One more year of education is associated with a 13.1% increase in earnings. This is the semi-elasticity.
And that makes more economic sense.
It really does. It implies compounding returns. If you already have high earnings, a 13.1% increase is a much larger dollar amount than if you have low earnings. This aligns much better with human capital theory. That skills multiply your value.
And the stats back this up, don't they? The notes mention the R squared value.
Yes. The log linear model has an R squared of 0.334, while the linear model is only 0.289. A higher R squared means the model explains more of the variation in the data. The log linear model just fits the reality of wage data better.
Okay, let's briefly look at the log-log model for this data, even if it's not the best fit. The result is log of earnings equals 6.543 plus 1.478 times log of education.
Right, so the coefficient is 1.478. Log on both sides, so we read it as is. Interpretation, a 1% increase in education is associated with a 1.478% increase in earnings.
And why is that kind of an awkward interpretation here?
Well, think about the independent variable, education. We don't really talk about increasing education by 1%. If you have 12 years of schooling, 1% of that is, what, about 6 weeks? It's not a natural unit for policy or for personal decision making. We think in years.
So while you can run the model, the log linear is just more intuitive.
Exactly. And quickly, the linear log model result was earnings equals minus 102,767 plus 54,452 times log of education.
Okay, log on the right, we divide by 100.
Correct. So 54,452 divided by 100 is about 544. The interpretation is a 1% increase in education is associated with a 544.4 increase in earnings.
Again, a bit of an odd mix of units.
It is. So for wage equations, the verdict is almost always strongly in favor of the log linear model. It handles the right skew of the income data, and it provides the most logical semi-elasticity interpretation.
Okay, let's move on to section 5. Some advanced approximations and the famous rule of 72. We established earlier that the change in log x is a good approximation for percentage change. There's another one in the notes. Log of 1 plus x is approximately equal to x.
Right. This comes from a Taylor series expansion for those who've taken calculus. But the intuition is that for very small values of x, so values close to 0, the function for the natural log of 1 plus x behaves almost exactly like the straight line yx.
Can you give us an example?
Sure. If you take the natural log of 1.05, that's log of 1 plus 0.05, your calculator will give you 0.0488.
Which is very, very close to 0.05.
It is. So we can say that log of 1 plus 0.05 is approximately 0.05.
The notes warn that this accuracy, it degrades as x gets larger.
It does. At x equals 0.1 down, the log of 1.10 is 0.0953. So our approximation of 0.10 is off by about 5%. At x equals 0.20, the lag of 1.20 is 0.1823. Now, our approximation of 0.20 is overestimating the true value by a pretty significant margin.
So the takeaway for students is?
Always remember, these approximations are for small rates, interest rates, inflation rates, growth rates, usually in the single digits.
This math is the secret sauce behind the rule of 72, isn't it? That famous rule of thumb in finance for calculating how long it takes for something to double. Can you derive that for us step by step?
Certainly. The basic question is, how long, let's call it n years, does it take for an investment growing at a rate r to double in value?
Okay.
We set up the compound interest equation,
yeah.
1 plus r to the power of n equals 2.
Right. It doubles. And we need to solve for n, which is stuck up there in the exponent.
So we need to bring it down. And the way we do that is by taking the natural log of both sides of the equation.
So log of 1 plus r to the n equals log of 2.
Right. And using our log rules, we can bring that exponent n down in front.
Right.
So we get n times the log of 1 plus r equals the log of 2.
Okay, now we just isolate n.
Exactly. N equals the natural log of 2 divided by the natural log of 1 plus r.
And now the approximations come in.
Yes. Now we plug in what we know. Right. The natural log of 2 is a constant. It's about 0.693. And using the approximation we just discussed, for small interest rates r, the natural log of 1 plus r is approximately equal to r.
So the formula simplifies to n is approximately 0.693 divided by r.
Mm.
But wait, if the interest rate is, say, 4%, we would use 0.04 for r. So that would be 0.693 divided by 0.04, which is 17.3. But we usually work with a percentage number, like 4, not the decimal.
That's right. So to make it easier, we multiply the numerator by 100. So we get 69.3 divided by r in percentage terms.
But then why do we call it the rule of 72, not the rule of 69.3?
Ah, for two clever reasons. First, 69.3 is just a pain to do mental math with. It's not easily divisible. And second, remember that our approximation, log of 1 plus r, is actually slightly less than r. By dividing by r, we're using a slightly larger number in the denominator, which means we're slightly underestimating the time it takes to double.
I see.
By bumping the numerator up from 69.3 to 72, we not only make the mental math a breeze 72 is divisible by 2, 3, 4, 6, 8, 9, 12, but we also build in a small correction for that approximation error. It makes the final answer more accurate for typical interest rates.
So let's test it. An investment at 4%.
The rule of 72 says 72 divided by 4 equals 18 years. The exact calculation is 17.67 years. It's an incredibly robust and useful shortcut.
That's a great tool for students to have in their back pocket. Okay, let's transition to our last big topic, section 6, exponential growth and compounding. This connects everything we've talked about to time series data. The notes discuss linear rising exponential growth. What does that mean in the context of something like GDP or the stock market?
Well, most major economic series grow exponentially. The formula is x at time t equals the initial value x0 times 1 plus r to the power of t. If you plot that on a standard graph, it looks like a hockey stick. It's pretty flat for a long time, and then it curves sharply upwards. And trying to fit a straight regression line, a y equals nx plus b line, to a curve is a major specification error. It just won't fit well.
So how do logs fix this?
If we make the natural log of that exponential equation, something magic happens. We get log of x equals log of x year times 1 plus r to the t.
And using log rules, you can split that up.
You can't. It becomes log of x equals log of x year plus t times the log of 1 plus r.
And there's that log of 1 plus r again, which is just approximately r.
Exactly. So the equation becomes log of x is approximately a constant, which is log of x zero plus r times t. And what is that?
That's the equation of a line.
It is. Your dependent variable is the log of x. Your independent variable is time t. And the slope of that line is r, the growth rate. So we've transformed exponential growth in levels into linear growth in logs.
And we have a perfect real-world example of this in the notes, the S&P 500 stock market index from 1927 to 2019. Panel A shows the raw prices.
And it looks incredibly volatile and curved, shooting up towards the end.
But panel B shows the natural log of those prices. And it's amazing how different it looks.
It is. Panel B reveals the underlying trend. It looks like a relatively straight line, just steadily moving up and to the right.
So what does that tell us?
It tells us that despite the Great Depression, the crash of 2008, all the booms and busts and volatility, the long-term growth rate of the market has been remarkably constant.
And we can calculate that rate from the slope of that line?
Yes. If you were to run a regression of the log of the S&P 500 on a time trend, the slope you'd get would be approximately 0.065.
So the S&P 500 has grown at an average compound rate of 6.5% per year over that entire 92-year period.
That's right. It's a really powerful way to visualize long-term trends without being distracted by the sheer scale of the numbers today.
Before we close out this study guide, we should just quickly touch on the inverse of the log one more time. The exponential function, or x.
Right. If y equals e to the x, then x equals the natural log of y. They're inverse functions.
Yeah.
And just as we have an approximation for logs, we have one for exponents.
Which is?
For a small x, e to the power of x is approximately 1 plus x. This is the counterpart to log of 1 plus x being approximately x.
And is there an error direction here too?
Yes. Since e to the x is a convex curve, it curves upwards. The linear approximation, 1 plus x, will always slightly underestimate the true value as x gets larger.
And this brings us right back to continuous compounding. If we have a nominal interest rate of, say, 12%, but it compounds continuously,
we calculate the effective return using E. With annual compounding, a 12% rate gives you a 12% yield. With monthly compounding, it's about 12.68%.
And continuous.
So the continuous compounding, we calculate E to the power of 0.12, which is about 1.1275. So the annual percentage yield, the APY, is 12.75%. That's the mathematical limit.
Excellent. We've covered the theory, the models, and the applications. Let's do a final review by running through some of those specific study exercises from the source material, a kind of rapid fire round.
I'm ready.
Okay. Scenario one, calculating percentage change. You have two values, A and B. You're told the natural log of A is 3.20. The natural log of B is 3.25. What is the approximate percentage change going from A to B?
Okay. Step one. Find the difference in the logs. 3.25 minus 3.20 is 0.05.
Step two.
Recognize that this log difference is the approximate proportionate change. So step three is convert to a percentage by multiplying by 100. 0.05 times 100 is 5.
So a 5% increase.
5% increase.
Correct. Scenario two, elasticity in a log-log model. You run a regression and get log of y equals 3 plus 0.5 times log of x. What is the elasticity of y with respect to x?
Okay, first, identify the model type. Both variables are logs, so this is a log-log model.
Right.
Second, recall the interpretation rule for log-log. The coefficient is the elasticity. The coefficient here is 0.5, so the elasticity is 0.5. 1% increase in x leads to a 0.5% increase in y.
Perfect. Scenario three. Semi-elasticity in a log-linear model. Your estimate is log of y equals 6 plus 0.2 times x. Note that x is not logged. How do you interpret the response of y?
Okay, model type is log-linear. Log on the left, level on the right. The rule is to multiply the coefficient by 100, so 0.2 times 100 equals 20. The interpretation is a 1-unit increase in x is associated with a 20% increase in y.
Got it. Scenario 4. Calculating price elasticity from some raw numbers. Demand for a product falls from 100 units to 90 units. At the same time, the price increases from $20 to $21. Compute the elasticity.
Okay, this is the definition of elasticity. Step one.
Yeah.
Calculate the proportionate change in quantity. It fell by 10 from a base of 100, so that's minus 10 over 100, which is minus 0.1. A 10% decrease.
And a price.
Step two. Proportionate change in price. It increased by 1 from a base of 20. So that's 1 over 20, which is 0.05. A 5% increase.
And the last step.
Divide the percent change in quantity by the percent change in price. So minus 0.10 divided by 0.05 equals minus 2. The price elasticity of demand is minus 2.
Great. Last one, scenario 5. A linear log model interpretation. You get yeah hat equals 10 plus 4 times the log of x. Interpret that coefficient of 4.
Okay, model type. Linear log. Level on the left, log on the right. The rule is to divide the coefficient by 100. So 4 divided by 100 equals 0.04.
And in the interpretation.
A 1% increase in x is associated with a 0.04 unit increase in y.
That covers the main exercise types students are going to encounter. So to wrap up this entire deep dive into Chapter 9, what is the final most important takeaway?
The takeaway is that logarithms are the essential tool for proportionate thinking in economics. Economic data is rarely linear. Wealth compounds, populations grow exponentially, and people and firms often think in percentages, not absolute dollars.
Right.
By mastering these four regression models and really understanding the logic of the natural log, you are aligning your statistical methods with the reality of the economic world. Just remember that big four cheat sheet.
Let's hear it one last time.
Linear is the slope. Log linear, you multiply by 100. Log log, you do nothing. It is the elasticity. And linear log, you divide by 100. If you can remember those rules and the logic behind them, you will handle Chapter 9 with no problem at all.
And a final provocative thought for our listeners, based on our discussion of the S&P 500. We said that if the log chart is a straight line, it means the growth rate is constant.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean if you are looking at a log chart, say, of something like computing power or viral spread, and the log line itself starts to curve upwards? What does that signify?
That would imply super exponential growth. It would mean that the rate of growth itself is increasing over time. It's a signal of, well, of a potential singularity or an explosive phase change in a system.
And conversely, if that log line starts to flatten out, the growth rate is decaying.
Exactly.
So develop that log vision. Learn to look at the shape of the curves in log scale. Thank you for listening to this study guide edition of The Deep Dive. Good luck with your econometrics, and we will see you next time.